Hello everyone, welcome to part two of the Stompcast. Marnie and I are wandering away. We are in South London. It is actually an okay day, given that it was absolutely hammering it down at about midday. It was really, really raining. I was worried we were going to get stormed off, but it's actually all right, isn't it?
I think our conversation has brought the sky out a little bit.
It has. I had that on my colourful umbrella. We always get a lot of messages on the Instagram about the umbrella. It is actually just an Amazon special. It's
well,
that
the
special.
Sky is doing me a favour because it's saving me from having to stand under that.
Wow.
I'm grateful to it.
Wow, okay. Well, hopefully the rain will just stay up in the sky and we can have a dry wander. You've got the boots for it anyway.
Like, I have.
Those boots are pretty high, so you need at least 2 or 3 foot of water before you be sweating.
Believe it or not, Alex, these boots were made for walking.
There we go.
Or stomping in this case.
Stomping, I love it. Yes, indeed. It's been an amazing conversation so far, and we've talked a lot about confidence.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And one of the things I think is very inspiring, you know, hearing and, you know, as I researched, you know, your story and some things that I've seen, you know, about your life and things, is your, I guess, determination, but also your ability to take something that was very painful and turn it into something that perhaps has a real positive, or it does have a real positive outcome. And, you know, if you'd excuse me doing so, I feel like there's quite a lot of similarities in that. Like I you know, I lost my brother to suicide, as many people know on the podcast. And, you know, I'm a big believer that energy is energy. And if you don't harness energy, or you don't learn how to use it, especially pain, especially grief and anger, it can actually destroy you. But if you use it well and you focus it, it can become a really powerful thing. And I know that you had an early experience in life with grief, so I wondered if you were comfortable with doing so, just sharing that and how that led into the journey and kind of, you know, what's brought you to here today and what you do right now with your business.
I mean, I lost my dad when I was 8 years old, so I was very young. Old enough to know what was going on, but not old enough to really process it in the proper way. And the climate for getting help and bereavement and just people talking about these things was very different. And my mum took a very hardline approach of like, we'll get on with it, we'll move forward. And I think that was her way of dealing with it. So I never really actually dealt with the grief. And very unintentionally, I stumbled upon boxing, and something about it just, I gravitated towards it. And I didn't realize until that first moment I hit the bags and, you know, it felt like the clouds parted and it was such a release, like you said, of energy. That was then my way of dealing with it.
So do you mean like physically, as you were like punching those bags, was there like is it a release of anger or sadness? Like, do you kind of remember what was happening as you were doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a sense of bottling everything up, not dealing with it, just going day to day, moving on. You've had this huge car crash of grief hit you and you're completely floored by it, but life goes on. And my dad was actually a Navy man, and he would always say, you know, chin up, chest out. So my mum's attitude when we lost him was also this sort of chin up, chest out, move forward, just get on with it, life. And boxing really broke that barrier for me. Being able to be angry was a real sense of release.
Did you feel like a sense of community in that space, in that boxing? Was it kind of, was there, because a lot of people think of boxing as a violent sport, but I think observing it, and I went to a boxing gym in North London actually a while ago, and it was set up by members of the Jewish community who basically wanted to, they wanted to create a space that young Jewish men could come and women could come to box and basically have like togetherness in such a situation where you're seeing anti-Semitism and those kind of things, right? And I saw that it was such a community feel. Is that what drew you as well? Did it give you comfort from that?
One of the biggest misconceptions about boxing is that, as you said, it's a place of violence. And I can't emphasize enough how much peace it has brought me. That feeling of being part of something, and even though you fight alone, you're very much together. I'd go as far as saying it's a second family.
I've never quite heard. I've never ever thought. It's probably the last word that I've thought of when thinking of boxing as peace. I know that probably that shows my lack of understanding.
Well,
but
no,
it's
everybody's, you know, misunderstanding. Yeah. I see how people make the connections of ego and bravado and anger and people physically fighting, but most of the time people are fighting their own demons, and that's what it was for me. When my dad did die, I wasn't sad, I wasn't hurt, I wasn't upset, but I was angry. Like, in my core, I was just angry. I don't know, I can't even articulate what that feeling, why that feeling came over me, but it was maybe a sense of why me, why my dad, he was a good man, why us, why not somebody else's
Injustice,
dad?
Injustice, almost.
Yeah, maybe. So boxing felt like a very natural fit, and I think it's good that we have alternatives. Not talking isn't necessarily the best outlet for everybody, and it wasn't, but for me it was a gateway. So it started off with boxing, it started with that physical outlet, and that then translated into being able to talk about it more. Yeah. and within the confines of a family, my boxing family, where they all have their own demons, boxing naturally attracts people that are going through stuff, maybe lower income families, maybe people with histories, you know. Yeah. It doesn't attract glistening, golden, pristine life stories.
But do you see people from lots of different walks of life? Because I think people often do assume that perhaps, yeah, being from a certain background, it equals a certain happiness and things. But perhaps I'd imagine you also do see people who come from traditional kind of wealthy backgrounds.
Well, that's
perhaps
the thing, is the more we talk about boxing being for everyone, the more you do get different kinds of people feeling like they can walk through the doors, you know. That's not me saying that it's a certain kind of person, that's just what it is.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it can't be for everyone. Sure. Because I think everybody has their own demons, you know. As Biggie said, more money, more problems sometimes. Mm.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not as straight and clear cut. And I think there's something really innate about punching and fighting. And, you know, people might lean on football, they might lean on tennis, but there's something special about the idea of punching out and letting it out and screaming it out into a bag that I think is a really good
thing. It's like an energy release. I mean, you know, famously Steve Jobs used to do scream therapy, which was like a huge, like, violent release of shouting or screaming.
Yeah.
To let energy out. But I suspect it can't be too dissimilar a process. I mean, I punched bags in the past. I used to have a boxing bag in my garage and used to punch down. I used to be angry and punch it. I do think there's there's this feeling of almost like primal release.
Yes.
Energy release. You like it's out, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do a little drill at the end of some of my sessions where people will get on the bags and for 30 seconds, I don't care about technique, I don't care about anything, just hit it
Swing.
As hard as you
Haymakers.
Can.
Haymakers.
Exactly, haymakers, go for it, let it all out. And for a lot of people, it's those 30 seconds which is what they come for. They come for a place where they can safely get it out of their system. You know, if you think about people, even in London, it's a great example because everyone is so angry and they're just walking around frustrated with their boss or their life or their relationships.
We have actually got thunder on the stump car, so love it. We're standing under this bridge.
Well, this is what I mean. Even someone up there is angry. You know, and it's...
Do you know, I blame you because you said about...
I did.
You jinxed it, literally. And literally less than 2 minutes after that, and we're now getting thunder and lightning.
Maybe it's because we're talking about the topic of anger.
Yeah, anger. Like, the world, nature needs to let it out as well.
Yeah,
but I
everybody
guess
almost, does.
You know, there is, thinking of nature, I love a good segue. We'll pause here for a minute, just as we might as well with the rain. Thinking about it, you know, when you see like forest fires, for example, the kind of the old-fashioned ones where they naturally happen, not some idiot that does arson. Like forest fires, they're an opportunity for nature to kind of burn down the wood and then start afresh and anew, and you kind of get that kind of fresh roots that come through from that, and like the burnt wood goes into the soil, and then you get the kind of restart. And it feels like almost like when you have those kinds of expressions of anger, even in nature, it does become an important part of healing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Starting again, starting afresh.
Absolutely. Even like avalanches, everything, like you said, that moment, that energy release from a human form to a hugely universal natural form, I think it is the start of something, maybe part of a process.
So
sometimes
how,
even if you don't know you need it.
That's true. How did that lead you to where you are today then? So you start, you went into that gym. How old were you when you first boxed?
I was 17 when I first boxed into that gym.
So you were 17 years old. You then started competing, winning, fighting.
Yeah.
You became a barrister. And then you changed direction again. And obviously, like, apprentice has happened recently, but you clearly had that, like, deep passion about this topic, which has led you now to open up your gym, the Bronx gym, yeah. Right? And one in this Camberwell is the
yeah,
first one, right?
Just Camberwell.
Do you know, Camberwell, it would be your first of many, I'm sure. The first one's in Camberwell. And that Camberwell one actually must be probably only a few hundred yards, I guess, away from King's College
it
Hospital.
We've been in there a few times,
which
yeah.
is, there you go, which is quite a cool tie, I thought.
Given, are you based at King's, Alex?
I used to be, not anymore. I used to be, so I was at King's in 2015, and I was there quite a lot until about 2017. Then I went over to Lewisham, so Lewisham not being very far from
You're not
from
too far
yeah.
still. I still can get you down.
Exactly, yeah. I'll come down. Maybe I need to come down. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
I'll come
of course.
Down. I'll come down and do a
I was
going
to come and grab you from King's. That's why I asked.
There's a deal. I'll come and do. I'll come and do a sesh.
Yeah.
I'll come do a sesh.
Like
that'd
that.
Be really fun. But it's an interesting kind of journey. And I think it really made me think about that point of, yes, like exercise can be a good way of letting out grief, and sometimes you've got to run or fight or whatever it'll be, to box, whatever, to get the energy out. But also, can grief actually be harnessed for other purposes as well, as a motivator almost, to achieve things in your own life? Do you find that that has happened? Has your grief directly led to you being the motivated person you are now?
It has, and on reflection I can say it has, but at the time I didn't realise that was happening, I think. Grief just shapes you. It just takes what you were and chops parts off. So I think I lost a lot of my softness, a lot of my playfulness, you know. At being eight, as soon as it happened, I really felt like I stepped into a man of the house kind of role, you know, to support my mum. I was an only child, and I really took on a lot of responsibility at a very young age. And that pans out even now. You'll see in The Apprentice some of the tasks I wanted to take the lead in. You know, I've got the best idea, listen to me. And I mean it with the best intentions, but it comes from a place of feeling like a really on alert space of mind where you have to take charge, you have to seize control, you have to, it's just to make sure everything's okay.
So some of it feels then perhaps is intentional, but some of it's just conditioned.
Exactly.
As in, like, some of it might be like, okay, this has happened, I'm going to use this to motivate myself. But some of it's actually like, this has happened, therefore I've had to step into this role, or life has made me this way. And I guess when I think about it, it's like, yeah, grief does like knock off some of, I don't know, the softness. It certainly changed your outlook on certain things.
Absolutely.
Things that perhaps would have bothered you before don't. And actually, in actual truth, some things that used to not bother you as much, I think bother you more.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting one, people perhaps don't talk about it. Sometimes you've got to really control your frustrations.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that made me obsessed with time, is I realised how limited of a time people have on the earth, and that also anything you want, like, there wasn't an inheritance or a trust or anything waiting. And it really made me realise, and I know it sounds crazy, even at eight, I became very financially aware. I became very understanding that if I did want a better life, if I wanted to transcend that lifestyle, then it would be on my shoulders to do it, you know?
It's almost that awareness that if you didn't do it, who would?
Exactly.
For you, if you didn't do it,
exactly.
Who would do
it? I suppose that has led to what we were talking about in the previous part of confidence. It's like, it has to come from within, you know, you are your own engine, you know, and it all, that fire starts and ends with you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So when did you decide to start the gym? Like, when was that, like?
When I was nine. No, I'm joking.
From day one?
Yes,
came out of the womb
after.
And I was like, I'm boxing, man. I'm going boxing.
No.
When did you kind of decide, and like, what has that process been like in terms of, you know, thinking of the idea, but also physically, like, choosing a location, opening the gym, and the challenges that have come from that?
Well, I think I've been in boxing since I was 17. So like you said, I started as a boxer, then I was a coach. I did some promoting of events. I dabbled all around it. And it really is a blood in, blood out sport because of that family connection. You really become tied to your commitment to the gym, to the people around you. And I owe boxing so much. Like every, when I look at my life, every pivotal moment has been changed by boxing. I owe every upwards trajectory to boxing. You know, I met my partner in the boxing gym. I met the barrister that then invited me to go and shadow her in a boxing gym. I never would have encountered a barrister in the normal world. So had it not been for that opportunity, that would have happened. So I just saw, I started to observe, being in boxing in so many different capacities, started to observe all of its power and everything it could be. And I thought, you know what, this place is magical. If we could bottle this feeling up that boxing gives people and sell it, then I might be a millionaire one day, because it is such a powerful thing. So then logistically, it was about finding a space, which happened very natural for me. It was fate almost. And then funding, which was the big barrier to break down. Up until that point, I had all of the plan in the world and all the intention, and then I realized, wait, I've got no money.
And is this where the apprentice came in, and that's why the apprentice role?
Prior to the apprentice, I set about raising funding already. So I raised just short of £400,000before going into the show. And then I saw at the end of every episode of the previous season, you know, if you think you've got what it takes, sign up here. And I thought, I do think I've got what it takes. So I put forward the application.
And you have to put your plan in then, don't you? Am I right? You have
right
to.
At the start.
You do actually have to commit to a plan at the start, don't
you? Yeah, and I think I think that might have been one of the things that won it for me, is because I'd had to go through that process to raise that previous money. I had to have a watertight business plan, and I wrote it thinking I'm going to answer every question that an investor would have. So when it came to giving it to Lord Sugar, it was almost like my second round of trying to get investment.
What is a business plan? For people that are listening, thinking like, what is that? Because it does sound very fancy, but what does it actually mean?
A business plan is, going back to what we were saying earlier, is ultimately your mind on paper. So you answering every question you would have about your business. And it's an important document. It's almost like my Bible of business. I go back to it, I consult it, I go, what did I say I was going to do if I encountered this problem? So, you know, you set out generally a summary of what you want to achieve. You talk about who you want to sell it to, how you're going to obtain that product or that service, how you're going to deliver it, what would happen if this, what your risks would be. And it's just, I like to see it as a visualization on paper, you know? There doesn't need to be a formality to it. And that's why I'd like everyone to know that anyone can write a business plan. You just have to keep writing your thoughts down and keep tracking it.
So is there something about using, could you use that then, a business plan, in a way, for any of your goals? Because presumably if you were like, I want to be, like the young kid I was, I want to go and work and be an A&E doctor at King's, presumably I could create a business plan of a type when I was younger and go like, well, this is what I want to do, how I want to do it, challenges, what am I going to do?
Yeah, why not? Because that's when it becomes real. That's when it goes from this muddy, grey sort of little seedling of a thought you have to actually something tangible that you can hold yourself to account to. Because I know there's things that I wrote in that business plan, and like I said, I'll consult it probably weekly, and I look at it and go, oh, I didn't do that, and I said I was going to do that. I said I was going to have made that amount of money by that time, and I haven't done it. So it's a document that you can hold yourself to account for as well.
It's like a manuscript, I guess.
It's like a blueprint.
Blueprint.
Yeah.
Blueprint. Yeah,
yeah,
I like that.
A blueprint.
I like that. And how is it going? How is it going at the canvas? How's it going in the gym?
Business is good. You know, we're achieving exactly what my initial aim was. Before money, before business, my initial goal was to recreate what boxing meant for me, for other people. And that's happening. You know, we just had a Christmas party, and seeing everybody come together outside of boxing, people that never would meet, like sharing drinks and laughing. And it really is a beautiful sight to behold, because it's just so unique.
Are you seeing people from all backgrounds coming? So men, women, also like the backgrounds in terms of lifestyles and all those things?
Absolutely. I've got people in there that have got out of prison in the last year, mixed with architects, engineers, people from the army, nurses. We've got a lot of nurses from King's. All of these people, and what it's doing is it's providing different perspectives as well, because there'll be people in there that will go, I wouldn't speak to that person who's just got out of prison. No way. Like, I'd avoid those people in the real world. But the thing is with boxing is you come to know them through the sport. You come to know them just by holding pads for each other, and then you find out their stories after. So that idea of not judging someone by their characteristics, you know, they're like check boxes. But knowing who they are and learning them beyond that surface.
Do you think boxing is a form of mindfulness?
Yes, because it brings you to the present. It brings you to that exact moment. You're not analysing, you're not thinking, you really are. And the coaches at Bronx, you know, work in a way where it's so fast-paced, you really don't have time to stop and feel sorry for yourself. You have to be empowered, you have to just go through with it. And people surprise themselves with how much they're capable of. That's another thing, is there's not a... Yeah. One thing I was really passionate about doing is creating a gym that's for everybody, not just from walks of life, but also from a fitness perspective. Mm. And demystifying this idea of boxing gym is for people with six packs and athletes. It's not really, truly, everybody is welcome there.
You know, it makes me think of, I had a call this morning with the doctor, our clinical lead, Ian Jordan, who basically for the app Metal, for our mental fitness app for men, he kind of leads a lot of, like, obviously the kind of direction of the clinical content, make sure that, you know, we're hitting the evidence-based stuff that we need to hit. And anyway, he was saying that one of the interesting things is that people think that thinking is the main thing that you do when you're conscious and awake. Like, when you're awake, that, you know, you think. But actually, there are many other things that one can be doing while being conscious that doesn't include that kind of noise and rabble of thoughts. And whenever we're doing something, whether it's carpentry, it's boxing, whether we're swimming, whether we're reading, whether we're engaging, anything engages us in the present that stops that noise is mindfulness, isn't it? It's being mindful. You are absolutely being present. And I guess when you're boxing, you're thinking either about the activity or not getting punched in the chin or doing the press-ups you're told to do. You're not thinking about stuff all the time, and therefore it is fundamentally a mindful activity. And it kind of, maybe the misconceptions of the, like what I said about peace, but you know, people thought, well, isn't boxing mindful? Well, it is, I'd say.
Absolutely. I don't think you could get more mindful than being in a moment of potentially having a fight, a controlled fight, a boxing match, or being stood in front of someone. If your focus is anywhere but that person, like checking their reactions and trying to really time it, then you'll lose the fight. Exactly. Like, I don't think there could be a better demonstration of mindfulness than being put in such a primal moment, you know?
It sounds fantastic. I mean, as we come to the end of the part then, I guess my final kind of question or asking you for your kind of advice is that, you know, for anyone that's going through grief right now, whether that's loss of a person or grieving through lost time or something that's happened, a relationship's ending, what would you say is some kind of motivational advice for that person to maybe use that scenario to kind of motivate in the way that you have? What would you say to that person?
I would say time heals. Mm. That's one thing. Mm. Because in those moments when you're in the absolute dregs of sadness and misery, it's really hard to picture a feeling beyond that and to think that there is light at the end of the tunnel. So the first thing would be to know that pain is temporary and that feeling will eventually subside to some extent, and you may be able to reframe that feeling in a way. But also, and again, it's really hard to do it in the thick of it, but once you get past it, you'll see all the positive things that grief made you. You know, I try to believe in fate and things happening for a reason. It's the only way I can justify losing my dad, because, like I said, he was a good man. He did no wrong to anyone. And I can think of more people that would have been deserving of it than him. So the only way I can justify it is that it was meant to happen for a reason. And perhaps I can look at it in a way that my dad's biggest sacrifice and gift to me was the person that made me. Because I know for a fact, had that experience not happened, I would not have the grit and the gumption to do and have achieved the things that I have.
Wow, that's very powerful. Thank you for sharing that, indeed. And with that, we'll come to the end of part two. And in part three, we're going to talk a little bit about why women should be in positions of leadership and perhaps whether we could avoid conflict or some of the challenges we do get in the world if more women were in those positions. I think it's a fascinating topic and an important one. See you all in part three, everyone. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.